Good day, listeners. Jonathan Daugherty here with another edition of the Pure Sex Radio program. For couples who want to pursue reconciliation and restoration after sexual betrayal, what does the process of recovery look like? Today's guest is Kat Etherington, Director of Recovery at Naked Truth Project. She helps us understand the key principles and practices that allow for the best possible results for couples wanting to heal and grow after betrayal. There is hope for recovery in your marriage. To learn more about Kat and her resources, visit NakedTruthProject.com. For even more resources, visit BeBroken.org or check out links in today's show notes. And we would sure love it if you'd rate and review the podcast after listening, because this does actually help others find it. Pure Sex Radio is produced by Be Broken Ministries, and we exist to help men, women, and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. Now, let's dive into today's conversation with Kat.
Well, all right. Kat Etherington, how are you today?
I'm very well, Jonathan. How are you?
Yeah, good. We are so excited to have you back on the program. You know, I was checking, last time we had you on was back in September of last year. And it's actually, for anybody who wants to look it up, it's episode 872. And you and Cindy Bama were on to talk about the journey of healing from betrayal trauma. And so that was a great conversation. That was really impactful for a lot of wives that are especially going through that. I wanted to have you back on to specifically talk about the couples that are looking to restore or recover after there has been sexual betrayal. And so before we dive into that, can you remind listeners that had heard you before, or maybe let listeners that haven't heard you on the podcast before, just tell us a little bit about who you are and the ministry that you're doing with Naked Truth.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. So as you said, my name's Kat Etherington. I'm the recovery director with Naked Truth Project. So Naked Truth Project are a UK-based but internationally operating organization. Our aim is to open eyes and free lives from the damaging impact of pornography. And the work that we do is really split into those two pieces. We do work around opening eyes, which is awareness and education. We talk with parents and school children and churches around kind of the issues related to pornography use and problematic sexual behavior. And then the work that I do is over in the sort of free lives section of our work, which is about recovery. And so my team and I offer online support for men and women seeking recovery, and also wives and partners seeking healing from problematic sexual behavior and betrayal. And we also have a team of couples practitioners working with couples who are trying to do that relational recovery piece.
Yeah, that is so good. And we're going to point people to those resources after our conversation today. But let's talk about this issue of the couple that has faced sexual betrayal, and then they are looking to want to recover. And I think it's probably important to lay the baseline here that we're really talking about couples that they both are wanting to have restoration, and maybe speak a little bit to how important that is to the foundation of our conversation, maybe moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, it almost sounds obvious, doesn't it? But actually, a lot of couples, when they present, have all sorts of reasons for wanting you to think that they're really committed to the process of recovery. And actually, that sometimes really isn't the case. It's, you know, it seems logical that somebody who's just been really caught out in a betrayal behavior might present as somebody who is willing to do whatever it takes to recover. And sometimes, as you begin that process, it becomes evident that that really isn't the case. Or maybe the other way around, where the partner kind of feels like they're supposed to want to, you know, put this marriage back together after a betrayal has taken place. And as you begin to do that work, and I guess because of the nature of the kind of work that needs to be done, sometimes that's very difficult. They can sort of change their mind or lose lose momentum in that process. And so I would say commitment to the process for to whatever degree you can muster is actually a real prerequisite for working together as a couple. You can do healing and recovery independently and be committed to that aspect of it, but couples work is something else, you know, and so that commitment is really necessary.
So once that kind of basic baseline is established, that there's genuine desire to want restoration, even if both partners have no clue what that means or what that looks like, but there is a genuine sense of the betraying spouse is saying, I'm all in on my personal recovery. The betrayed spouse is saying, I'm all in on this healing journey. When they get to that point, where do they start? What does the couple work look like? Where does it need to begin? And what are some of the key things that are those initial steps and stages of recovery for the couple?
Yeah, I'm really glad that you asked that question, Jonathan, because I think this idea of early recovery couples work is actually, just at the very cutting edge of the resources that are becoming available within the sex addiction and betrayal recovery fields. And I love that, you know, we are among the ministries and the professionals who are really at the front edge of what is a developing field. And so, you know, traditional wisdom, and you won't have to look hard to find this in the betrayal recovery field, is that you can't do couples work at the beginning and that it's contraindicated, it's bad, and you shouldn't do it. In fact, what we're beginning to understand is that there is some type of couples work that can be done right at the very beginning of the process. Now, that doesn't look like traditional couples therapy that would start with talking about communication issues and relational dynamics. That it looks a bit different to that. But it can be really, really effective in the beginning. So, you know, right at the very start, you're looking at how do we create safety and stability within this relationship. And of course, safety and stability is the first stage of the partner journey in terms of kind of getting her safe and secure within her own emotional reality and understanding the relational reality. So that would be a great place to start for couples is, you know, while he's doing his early recovery work, doing his defining of boundaries, working out what sobriety looks like and developing his relapse plan, I'm wanting to bring her in on that so that she feels like she understands. And I'm talking in very, you know, gender normative terms, just because that is sort of the demographic that we work with. It does happen the other way around. We just sadly don't get to meet that many couples that way for our work. But typically with a husband with problematic sexual behavior and a betrayed wife, I'm wanting to create a flow of information really early and really intentionally, and trying to help couples create a container for safe communication right at the very beginning. Because you know, and I know that the relational dynamics of early discovery, well, let's call it early discovery rather than early recovery, are messy and painful and chaotic and all of those things. And so, you know, there are some things we're trying to do very early on to establish safe ways to bring a couple together that are kind of strategic, is the word that I often use. You know, we're trying to do a few specific things that help create safety.
Yeah, I had on the podcast recently, I had Dr. Michael Seitzma on. And he was talking about how, you know, in the long term, you're looking at having to deal with the healing of like a cancer in this marriage. But at first, you got to deal with the cut that's bleeding out right now. So there's a sense in which we got to deal with the immediate need, and then we can get to some of the longer term stuff. As you're saying this, I wonder how important is it in what we've called here the kind of the early discovery season of the recovery for the marriage. How important is it that this is a facilitated process for a couple, like for with a counselor or a coach or somebody that can come alongside them? How much of it is them needing to have somebody that can sort of train and guide them in this process versus some things that they may be able to kind of do on their own through, let's say, a book or something else? Because it seems to me like what you're talking about here, wow, that could get pretty complicated pretty quickly. And if they, in their brokenness and their pain, are trying to navigate this on their own, it seems to me like there could be a lot of problematic things that could come from that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, certainly with a good number of the couples that I work with, probably in the very beginning, the single most important component of couples work is a third person. A third person who can hold a safe space, who can meet their storm with my calm, who can stay grounded and regulated and help them to do the same. You know, I would say in the very beginning, that is probably the key ingredient of early couples work. And actually, what you're helping them do is break out of these trauma cycles of reliving hurt and pain all over, and right from the very beginning, having a different experience of that, recognizing that they can go to those places of hurt and pain without causing more hurt and pain. Because that's what couples are doing in the beginning. They're reeling in these cycles of trying to communicate in the best way that they know how from within their own pain or within their shame, and making it worse for each other. And so really, I would say in the very beginning, it's probably the most important thing that they've got somebody really safe who can hold that space and say, okay, is this how we want to do this? Or should we try something that feels different to this? Because mm-hmm. they can do that without you, right? Like you said, so I won't let couples pay me to do what they can do in their kitchen without my help.
Yeah. So once there has been maybe that environment of safety beginning to be established, what are some of the essentials then that really do need to be focused on and worked on in the restoration of this marriage that has been broken by betrayal?
Yeah, I think that's the most important question for betrayal recovery, is that typically and historically, couples work has gone too quickly to looking forward, building the new. And that does need to happen. It absolutely does need to happen. But if we do that too soon, if we don't do enough looking back, which is the stuff that people don't like and don't want to do, which is probably why we find it easier to try to skip that piece. But my experience is, if you don't give couples space to process the past, to come together on a shared understanding of that, which includes communicating about how that was for each of them, then they really can't move into that space of building something new. They might try, but they're going to keep falling down. They're going to keep tripping each other up. And typically that's because they just haven't spent enough time in this kind of space of processing what is happening in their marriage right now. And, you know, I take a lot of what I know about couples work from the trainings I've done with people like Dr. Jake Porter, and he really emphasizes the couple's grieving process. And as I've gone on to do more work with couples, I can see why he spends a lot of time talking about that, because that's the piece that grief is the piece that most people don't want to do in their own individual journey, because it's hard work and it doesn't feel good. And so to put a couple together and try to walk them through that process of grieving and telling of their story with and to each other is pretty tricky, and it takes a high level of ability to hold space for one another, which means it can take a little bit of time, right, to sort of build those skills and all of that. So yeah, I would say, you know, the bit in the middle is not just about grief, it's also about sort of other relational dynamics, but there's a lot of kind of making sure that using your wound analogy, it's like, okay, we stopped the bleeding. The sort of second stage is we're cleaning it out, we're getting rid of the infected pieces, and before we go ahead and sew it up and think about whether there's going to be a scar, we first need to make sure we're not going to sew in any infections. We need to get all of that out.
Yeah, so as couples are kind of navigating this and pulling this out, how important is it to expose and deal with issues of fear and anxiety? Because every couple that I've ever worked with, both spouses are afraid. They've got different, they might have some different fears, but I've seen that there can be also a lot of fears that are similar. What does it look like for a couple to begin to learn how to talk and express those fears in a healthy way so that there can be restoration?
Yeah. I mean, that's that safety piece, right? That's the third person in the room to say, huh, what's going on here? As you begin to watch a couple fall into an old pattern. And, you know, one of my favorite tools for intervention is just to notice. I'm like, huh, look, something's happening between you. What is that? And to create an environment where you can say, I feel really afraid that what I need to say is gonna drive you away from me, or I feel afraid that what I need to say is gonna be judged by you or rejected or dismissed or whatever that is. And actually that's the transformative piece of couples work in my experience, is when couples who are committed to seeking to care about each other's reality, care about each other's emotional experience, often in speaking out that fear, have that moment of realizing either that fear is unfounded, or that fear can, that the vulnerability of expressing that fear can create a moment of connection, can create a moment of empathy or compassion. And couples every day of my working life just kind of surprise me and surprise themselves with what they are actually capable of. I think if you have been through the type of stuff that a lot of the couples that we work with have been through, and you're willing to go to couples work, it really says something about your value of the marriage, your commitment, all of those things. And so they really are capable of much, much more of those things than they believe. And it's in those moments that the healing happens.
Yeah, let's talk about expectations. I think, you know, every couple before they even got married had expectations about even what marriage would be, right? So, and probably didn't line up on what those were. Can you talk a little bit about how couples can talk about their differing expectations of what recovery and restoration should look like? And then maybe in general terms, what is kind of the goal of this process? Like, what are we hoping for in terms of an outcome?
Yeah, I think expectations is a really tricky one, isn't it? Because even when you start thinking about, well, what are my expectations? There's a whole lot of stuff under a concept or an idea like expectations that actually drives that. So when you start talking about expectations, you're really talking about things like fear. You're really talking about things like safety. You're really talking about what are the sort of bare essentials that can mean that I can hang on. But of course, the other thing that couples always want to know is, what does recovery look like? What should I be looking for in my partner? And, you know, we have slides on our webinars that sort of show things that can happen along the way in recovery, and people put together roadmaps and all of that stuff. But couples work particularly is such an individualized process, because not only do you have these two individual people doing usually their own individual work and maybe doing different pieces at different times, but then you also have this other entity, which is the relationship, which is kind of its own thing altogether. So often one of the early pieces of work that I do with my couples is to kind of map their typical relationship dynamic. When you get into a fight, what does that typically look like? Body language, facial expressions, intonality in the voice, what would you see in one another? Because what I'm trying to help them to recognize is, what's their default track when things are going out of, kind of off track? And so, you know, I guess when you're thinking about expectations, I think what I want my couples to understand is, first of all, it's a long-term gig, especially because there's all that history of relational dynamics. There's a history of betrayal, but there's also usually a history of marriage. And all married couples have this well-worn track that they are used to kind of occupying. And so they do a lot of filling in the blanks, thinking that they know what's coming next. And so all that to say, there are expectations, and to whatever degree I can, I try to help my clients kind of shelf their expectations, which are usually future focused, right? They're forecasting an outcome and stay in the present, because the moments of healing and the moments of connection are now. They're not in some future point, right? And so to speak to your question of what's the real aim of couples work, the real aim is to create safe moments of connectedness where they can feel what it is to know and be known in a way that feels safe and vulnerable and accepting.
So let's talk about that for a second, because I hear in what you're saying in terms of that idea of creating that safety of being known and knowing, is that seems to require a high degree of empathy and understanding in the relationship. And when you come out of sexual betrayal, there has been a lack of empathy and understanding, because there have been deception and secrets, and there's been hiding, and there's been all the issues that come with the dividedness that comes with a betrayal like that. What are some exercises that couples can do to kind of grow in their empathy and understanding for the other person's journey? I'm thinking of it from the betrayer standpoint, where that's a person that's been highly self-centered. They were thinking about their own desires. They did not have regard for their spouse when they committed their acts of betrayal. Mm. What are some exercises that in our case, that husband can do to try to actually learn empathy, to gain understanding of his wife, and vice versa? How can she learn to gain understanding of her husband?
Yeah, thank you for asking that, because that allows me to offer your listeners some reassurance. I'm going to be really honest and say I'm for sure working the person who did the betraying way harder in the beginning than I'm working the partner, because she is usually looking to see, is he going to be in this with me? Is he going to make some changes? Is he going to put himself out for me? Is he going to put himself on the line for me? And that's about the recalibration of power in the relationship, where you've had power because you've had secrets that have held me back from knowing what's true and what's not true. And I haven't been able to make empowered decisions for myself. And that has to be balanced, right? And so I want to, just for those partners listening who are going, don't ask me to empathize with him in week one. I get it. We're certainly looking for a demonstration of commitment and willingness. Here's the thing, though, it does require empathy from the partner. It really, you know, ultimately, if you're going to stay in a relationship that with somebody who has hurt you, you're going to have to be willing to try to understand that and to be able to understand that in a way that makes sense to you. Because if you can't understand that, you won't feel safe, right? So one of the biggest questions that partners are asking is, how could he do this to me? Why would he do this to me? And in the early stages of betrayal trauma, we make meaning from that is usually about ourselves, right? And I'm speaking from personal experience as a betrayed partner myself. So we will initially assume I wasn't enough. And actually, that process of building compassion with the betrayer is also a process of re-understanding the narrative yourself. Because if you pay attention and you can create space for that, you'll begin to learn this is really about his childhood. This is really about his own traumas. This is really about his shame, his lack of self-compassion. It's really about all this other stuff. And mm-hmm. that's healing when you begin to realize, oh, it's really about him and it's not really about me. There are sort of high levels of empathy that are required. And in terms of how to do that, that probably the most important exercise for couples is to, and it sounds so basic, because it is to learn to listen. And when I sort of say that, what I say to my couples is we're not just learning to hear, which is about I can hear that there's noise there. We're learning to listen first to what is actually being said. And so I do a lot of speaker listener, kind of reflective listening exercises with my couples. And it blows my mind how many times a person says a combination of words and the person doing the reflective listening says some similar but different combination of words in response that includes a little bit of their own interpretation, a little bit of their own expectation. And so like at a very foundational level, because of the way that our brain is desired to fill in the gaps and shortcut the process. And I literally hear couples say, like, I know where this is going. And they have finished a conversation in their head before the person speaking has finished their sentence. And so the very first thing that I'm trying to do with my couples is, okay, let's just slow down and really listen to what is being said. And then once we've got some of that, I'm into like, okay, so now we're going to try to listen to what's not being said. What's the meaning of that? And if you don't know, let's ask the question. So you're sort of really, you used a term earlier that sort of alluded to this kind of guiding them through the process. I heard somebody once describe being a couples professional as being like a process consultant. And I tell my clients that all the time. It's like, my job is to keep you in a safe track. So I'm just kind of, I'm like the flippers on the pinball machine. I'm just trying to keep it in play and I'm trying to keep it in a safe track and really help you to do it differently than how you would normally do it.
Yeah. And I think it's important to note this idea of empathy is not ever making excuses for somebody's sin or anything like that.
Right.
But it is so powerful for being able to understand perspective, to be able to understand another person's brokenness or their journey, even though we can never do that perfectly. Right. Kat, I could never walk in your shoes. I can't be you. But there is a sense in which our connection as humans, there is a way for us to be able to understand one another more deeply through what you mentioned is like these active listening exercises. But let me ask you this, as we've got a few more minutes left, what are some of the most common obstacles that you see to this process for couples? You know, what are some of the roadblocks that couples get snagged on as they are trying to recover and restore their relationship?
There's one that exceeds all others for me, which is emotional regulation. The biggest disruptor of couples work in my experience is emotional regulation challenges. Couples who fall back into that familiar pattern and they are so used to walking that path that they just slide right through. And you know, it can sometimes be really hard to sort of jump in and try to get them back on track, or, you know, they're so invested in their perspective, in their point of view that, you know, and sometimes you just have to let it run. I'm like, okay, say all the things and then we'll try something else, because, and I get that, you know, especially with betrayed partners, often they have been so consistently unseen and unheard that when you give them the floor, that's their moment and they're going to take it. And so I'm much more inclined to let a betrayed partner have her say, however that comes out, and then sort of reverse engineer it from there. But what we don't want, and what I'm really, really trying to work against with my couples all the time, is for couples work to feel terrible. Because if you bring a couple in and they recreate those fights that they're having at their kitchen table or at 11 o'clock at night in their bedroom, if they're just recreating that in the therapy room or in the coaching space, then actually you are creating a traumatic experience of couples work. And the one thing that will prevent couples coming back in for couples work is if they're getting traumatized doing it. So I would say emotional regulation is by far the biggest challenge. And actually, I do a lot of that work with couples too, where I'm just going, okay, I see it. Let's practice what it looks like to calm down when things get off track. So I would say that's a big one, and that sort of investment in their own perspective. Just kind of lack of emotional understanding can be difficult too. You know, a partner's experience can be so multifaceted and multi-layered. It can be hard for her to even articulate everything that she's thinking and feeling all at once. And so I always think, gosh, if it's hard for her to even make sense of it and then try to communicate that, how much harder is it for someone who hasn't experienced that to try to keep up with that and try to really take that in while at the same time kind of managing their own emotional response to it. So there's a complexity to the dynamics there as well, which can make it really tricky.
Yeah. One of the things that we talk about with the men all the time is we've spent probably about 90% of our time helping men get on what we call an emotional growth mission. Like, right. They've got to mature emotionally. There's emotional growth that has to take place. So I appreciate you sharing that. One last thing I want to share before, or ask you about before we have you share some of your resources that you all have. How can couples respond when there has been a relapse, or maybe there's some triggering event that has occurred in the relationship that makes them feel as if, oh my goodness, we've taken 10 steps backwards? How can couples manage some of that part of the messiness of this is not a perfect journey?
Yeah, I love that you asked that question, because that is something that I will say to every couple. Like, you know, you will have, and I describe couples work as being like the little girl who had a little curl in the middle of her forehead, because when it's good, it's so, so good. But when it's bad, it can be really horrid for everyone, you know. And so, you know, there are times when I've worked with a couple and I've thought, oh gosh, that session just made everything worse. And so I know, like, if I feel that as the practitioner, I know that couples feel that. And I try to just be honest about that from the very beginning. I'm like, you know, we'll have some magic moments is what I call them. We'll have some magic moments along the way where you will feel something that you've never felt before. And we will have some muddy moments along the way where you'll feel like you've fallen in a puddle and everything is as wet as it was at the beginning. And so I think just being really honest about that, letting them know to expect that. But also I actually use a tool that folks can look up online called the Pyramid of Competency. It's like a learning theory, and it talks about the stages of learning that people go through before they reach this kind of a unconscious competence, which is I just do what I do. And before you get there, you go through stages of unconscious incompetence, where I don't know that I don't know, and then conscious incompetence, where I know that I'm learning and I'm really trying hard, and then conscious competence, which is I'm super trying something different. And most people sit along that line of knowing they don't know and trying to know, and kind of I find that tool helps couples to understand this process of you don't go from not knowing that you don't know how to do something to doing it 100% of the time overnight. What we're looking for is, are we trying? Are we, you know, and I think that one of the biggest things for couples is the do-over. Like, oh, that wasn't what I wanted it to be. After the fact, can we try again? And I know for sure that most of the couples that I work with, the person who maybe didn't get what they needed in a difficult conversation usually really appreciates the awareness, or that didn't feel good, I wasn't able to show up the way that I wanted to there. And they appreciate the humility and the vulnerability of the other person coming back and saying, can I try again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's also important to reiterate that the principles of recovery and restoration don't change just because there's been a slip up or some kind of trigger or whatever. And so I think that's really important. The process remains the same. You just got to re-engage it, right? So, Kat, this has been a phenomenal conversation.
Couples are looking for something different when things get hard, Jonathan. Sorry, I was just saying couples are, you know, they do come in and they're like, oh, can we get that other thing that you could teach us to do? And I always tell them, the stuff that I'm teaching you to do is the stuff that you do, no matter what. Like, and it's just about practicing. I think, you know, when something does go wrong, couples are like, please give us that magic tool. It's like, yeah, sorry, but it's about practice.
Yeah. It's kind of like, yeah, many times we're asking, I think we even ask this of God, like, what else can we be doing? Because, you know, I'm not very good at what you're asking me to do. And it sounds like hard and it's really self-sacrificial and all. What else do you have for me?
Right.
So, exactly. You know, what's the magic pill that you can give me that'll make everything better? So this has been phenomenal. And where can our listeners go to learn more about you and get some resources that can be helpful to them on this journey?
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. All of our recovery programs, as well as the other education and awareness work that we do, is at nakedtruthproject.com. You want the little drop-down menu that says get help if you're interested in any of our programs.
That's awesome. Well, Kat, thanks again for doing what you're doing and for being part of the conversation today.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Jonathan. Just before we go, I wanted to make your listeners aware of some resources that we've just released that are international in their focus. So one of the ways that we've tried to support people around the world is trying to bring resources where there are less. And so we've been running some retreats in various places. And I'm really excited that this year in July, we'll be running a retreat in Australia, which is the first time that we've ever done that. It's a grief-related retreat for betrayed partners. And so I just wanted to make sure that since you have, I think, a broad listenership, I wanted to make sure that the Aussies got to hear about some of the Australian resources. So I will send Jonathan some of the links to access some of our retreats that are happening around the world this year. But in particular, I wanted to mention the Australia one.
Yeah. Absolutely. We'll be happy to share that in our show notes. We've been starting to do more international things, some of which is actually in Australia. So we'll have to talk offline about that. But we're excited about that. And listeners, we're always glad that you're with us. Our hope is to help you take your next best step on your journey, whatever that is, and with whomever that needs to be. We want to help you take that step. So please reach out to us, and we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.